Hello and welcome to Como Sasas episode dos. We're here, I guess it's well into Friday night now, about 1 o'clock after we got back from the arena, this show Thursday night. Rob's here again.
Hello.
We went around the city a little bit during the day, but I think the big event was the show. But before we went to the show, we're going out to pick up tickets for the other CML events this week, the Sunday show and the Tuesday show. And on our way back, we got to drive by with a helpful taxi driver who drove slow past the photo exhibit that CML and the cultural department opened this past week. And we're planning on walking through there tomorrow, but just driving by it, there are so many just really great photos.
Giant sized photos all over the park, I guess it surrounds, and lots of guys, not just TML guys. There's pictures from Japan. Prince David is up there. That's a Mexican picture though, but there are pictures of CML in Japan, yeah. And all the people who took the pictures are credited underneath. And it's really long. It'll take us a while to get through it, so we'll probably spend like an hour just taking pictures of everybody. And we even saw the original Místico. Mm-hmm. Now Sin Cara is in the picture, so apparently there's no limit. There's no you're not on good terms with the promotion, they'll put you up there.
Yeah, I think a lot of the photos we saw were from like more recent years, but they also all go back to older photos. It's just a wide array of different shots, a lot of really great shots. Some shots you've probably seen on the CML website, some stuff that you definitely haven't seen. So
most pictures by Alexis Salazar, who works for CMLO, but also various other people. And as Cub said, from different time period, we saw stuff with like Mascara Purpura, if anybody still remembers him, and all the way current photos like from the recent En Busca de un Ídolo. So
yeah,
it looks nice. I'm hoping to get some good pictures tomorrow.
After that, the other Lucha thing we did was go to the IWRG show.
Yeah.
Yes. I think Rob enjoyed it.
Oh, yes.
We rode over there and got there early, so we got to see the whole arena. You know, when I was a lot younger, the first time I went to Wrigley Field, it felt like stepping onto like a movie set, because I'd seen it so many times on TV, and it was the same feeling when I got to the arena today. It was amazing to be there in person. It kind of, in some sense, it didn't seem as large as it does on TV, but it felt like even more special being there in person than you can grab when you're watching on TV.
And honestly, our view is probably distorted, because we had the privilege, I guess, of we were going with Black Terry and Black Terry Jr. So Black Terry Jr. was nice enough to get us access into the arena before, instead of waiting outside, because we were there so early. So we actually got to stand in an empty arena of Naucalpan and take our pictures and check out every little nook and cranny in the place.
We got to see the Corona
cases, the dented Corona the cases where they carry the beer around in. I guess after somebody smashes someone in the head with it, they haven't replaced it in years.
Yeah.
But we saw every part of the building. We took pictures, and even before the fans started filing in, the one thing was it seemed much smaller in person, or so I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. You see it as a big space, but it seems more like almost the size, I guess, like if you had a TV wrestling arena, it would kind of feel that way. I'm not sure if that I'm even explaining it right, but it was a tighter, more compact space. It wasn't as spread out, and I think that really helps with the sound, because it wasn't really a big turnout tonight. I think it's probably what they usually get on Thursday nights.
About 150, I'd say.
Yeah, around there, but the arena just has good sound, so 150 people making noise, making comments was enough to really feel like it was an important show. It did. I think if we saw the same show and see it in like Arena Mexico with as many people, might feel more. The Tuesday night shows they have sometimes feel a little dead because there's not that much crowd noise, but that wasn't a problem at all tonight.
One of the first things I noticed, especially, was that when we went to our ringside seats, was that there's actually, the ring is actually, even the ringside area is up on a platform, sort of. So the seats are actually more on the ground. So it's farther distance, you know, from the ring when guys do dives and then they land on the ramp and then fall into the crowd. They're actually falling downwards even more. And the other thing is, before we went in, we were outside and they have old IWRG shows playing on screens outside as the fans wait.
Just the TVC Deporte.
TVC Deporte shows, right.
Even they can get AYM.
Right. And it's not as busy as we saw Reina Mexico the other day. Mm. It was just basically one vendor was out there with masks.
Yeah.
And other than that, you basically just stand around and just wait. But they have the giant poster of the show outside, of course.
Yeah. We saw plenty of posters for both the IWRG show and for the most recent AAA show,
on the
streets on their way to the show.
And of course, the most important detail we forgot to mention, the wrestlers were going in, and I got my picture with Alan Extreme, the best wrestler in the world for tonight.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unlike what we saw in Reno, Mexico, everyone who was coming to IWRG had their mask on when they got to the building.
Front door, by the way, no back entrance. Yeah. They walked through the front just like the fans.
Yeah, they walked through the fans who were waiting to buy tickets or waiting to get in the building.
And it should be said before we go any further, the wrestlers were extremely nice, like more than you can imagine. They stopped, shook hands, they talked, and even to us foreigners who could barely speak the language that they were speaking, guys like Fulgor, both of them, Centurion, Allen, Golden Magic. They all stopped to talk, and they were very polite. Mm. They didn't treat us like, you know, we were second class or anything. Mm. And actually, we'll probably forget this as we go through the results, so we should mention it, but they were even nice enough while the main event was going on and a couple of them were leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They called us over, and we went over, you know, to say goodbyes and everything.
Mm. Yeah.
And I've been to a lot of U.S. indie shows, and I've never experienced anything like that.
Yeah, they were very polite. They were very kind with their time. We sat and talked to Centurion and Fulgor One for a while before they let anyone else into the building. So that was great.
For those of you wondering, Centurion, big fan of PWG.
Yes, and Fulgor speaks better English than he gives himself credit for.
He loves the fuck word. Yes.
Yes. And before the show, we met Noriko, who helps with all the Japanese wrestlers who come to Mexico to work. They stay. She helps them get accustomed to Mexican life, and she's a big fan of Lucha Libre. I think Black Terry was trying to make the case that she had seen more shows last year than he had. You've probably seen her in the crowd on some shows, and she spoke Spanish and English with us, and she said she was a big fan of the site, which I appreciate. A lot of people have said that on the way here. They've been fans, which has been a big surprise.
So for those of you who are on the website and leave all those nasty comments for Cubs fan, you can go to hell because the wrestlers love it. So he's going to keep doing it. But actually, I think I've seen her, Noriko, on TV before. I'm pretty sure Bill has mentioned her once, twice, or 100 times.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah. She looks very beautiful in person, so it's too bad you weren't here, Bill. You have enjoyed meeting her.
So shall we get on with the report? Because then this is going to be a two-hour podcast.
Yeah. The opener was Fulgor Dos versus Sky Angel. Why do they do Roman numerals? What we do, no one's really thought about.
Pretty much, yeah. So, Sky Angel, some of you may remember from who took a vicious fall when he tried the Dorada Especial in one of those IWRG versus Random Jim Torneo Cibernéticos. Yeah. And I can't remember seeing him recently at all. So
he was in the 8-man elimination match for the lightweight tournament because that was the one where Elisa forgot what his name was.
Of course, yes.
We saw her. I didn't talk to her. On second there, I probably should have, just so I could find out if she knew why she blocked me or if she knew she blocked me, but maybe some other day.
She was there with her boyfriend, who is about twice the size of every normal person in the world.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure even Dragon Rojo would be jealous of how big this dude was.
Yeah.
So we were better served just looking from afar.
Yes.
Oh, one interesting thing we should mention is, before the show even started, I mentioned to Cubs, hey, it's weird. They're showing the AYM graphics on the screen, and it seems like they're taking longer pauses. Mm-hmm. This is very strange. So, of course, during the show, Cecilia got a tweet from somebody who's like...
From Albert.
From who?
Albert.
I saw you guys on TV. I'm watching IWRG. So, of course, AYM, of course, in their infinite wisdom, decided not to let anybody know that they're airing the show live tonight.
Yes. People there did not know.
We surprised Black Terry Jr. even when we told him. He tried to tell us it's not true.
Yeah. It looks like from the schedule, it'll repeat Saturday, and then it's Sunday and Monday early morning on LES. So we'll have it eventually. But it was weird. We expected to be a taping because of the RCH show, but it was just weird that they were airing it live and didn't make a big note. Didn't say anything about it, but that's what AYM for you. Now, they did not tape the opener because the camera people were not out there.
But somebody taped it. Yeah. I saw somebody who was recording a fan cam illegally? Is that how you say it? Yes, illegally.
I didn't see it. They didn't do the warning that you're not allowed to tape things or it'll kick you out. I've heard that warning at indie shows. I didn't remember hearing there, so I'm all good. I don't think the fan cam is going to hurt anybody, except if you try to watch it, because I don't know about the video. But hopefully, by the time I put this up, it'll also be up and you can take a look at about 5 minutes from the match. It was...
We should mention, actually, as long as we're on this topic, we talked to the RCH promoter, and supposedly that show is also going to be live on AYM. Mm-hmm. So some of you may want to keep an eye out. That's Monday, by the way.
Yeah, that's Monday at 5. So maybe if you're around, that's worth checking out. That's something I should check out, see if I can record it. But what did you think of the Sky Angel Full Gore 2 match?
Pretty good. Like most IWG openers, started slow, had some mat work, built up a bit. Right in front of us, Sky Angel did this awesome step on the second rope, turn around onto the third rope, arm drag. And they did a couple of stiff kicks. There was a cool spot where Sky Angel did a handspring off the ropes and then tried to backflip over Fulgore, who basically caught him and dumped him with like a diamond cutter onto his face. It was a short match, I think only about 7 or 8 minutes long, just to get the crowd warmed up. And some people were still arriving during the show, and in the end, it was
Sky Angel
with the win. Yeah. Yes. Cubs has detailed notes, so he's good with the winners and losers. I'm good with the high spots.
I thought both were good for the rookie-level opener match. I thought Fulgore 2 was a little bit better than Sky Angel.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, sir.
The next match was the tag match with two referees in the ring. It was Fresero and...
Aliado de Alas, or something like that.
De los Diaz.
Yeah.
He's the ally of God. I'm not sure why, because he was kind of a jerk in match. I don't know what God's putting up with that.
Insert commentary on religion here, but go ahead.
Versus Al Nextreme, and who was his partner?
Acero, who looks like a bigger trauma.
Yes.
But it's not a trauma, by the way.
No.
We saw him entering the building, and nobody knew who he was. Yeah. Even people who go to IWRG every week.
The story of the match was that the ally
of God was an asshole.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. He stole... Fusero was improbably going for a moonsault at the end of the first fall.
Which took about 30 seconds for him to climb up the ropes.
And then his partner stole the pin. So it was sent out, and Fresero was really the most good natured about this of anyone I've ever seen get a pin stolen.
Sure, he basically turned to the crowd who was like taunting him for taking so long to climb the ropes and was like, what the hell do I care, we won. So you know how Brian Alvarez is always screaming about guys who are angry when they win a match? Well, Fresero is the exact opposite. He just wants to win, he doesn't care how.
And those guys were a technico, so
yeah.
That's good. They also took most of the second fall. I think just Al Nextreme and Masero just rallied back near the end of that fall.
Finish was awesome, by the way.
Yes.
They double teamed Spike Powerbomb, or they tried to. It kind of came off a little weird, but they slammed down Fresero, and then they grabbed his partner and powerbombed him onto Fresero, and then covered them both for the win.
That was
really pretty awesome, sure. Yeah. And actually leading into that was a spot where they ran both of them into each other, which teased the more dissension later on in the match. And in the third fall, it was basically back and forth action. Aliado did a dive right in front of us.
Yes.
Of course, right in front of us. So we had to get out of the way, which is good that there were so few fans there because we could actually push each other out of the way.
Yeah.
And then they re-entered the ring. And how did Aliado? Aliado got pinned first.
No, what happened was that Aliado tripped up Fresero from the outside when he was doing something. Because Racero had a good spare, and then he was going to do, like, I guess a double clothesline or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tripped him up for absolutely no reason. It wasn't like Racero had just hit him before. And
once again, this is the ally of God acting this way.
And then what was it? Then I think, yeah, because then
Aliado
came in and he got beat by the Rudos. And then Racero just kind of gave up.
Racero, it looked like he wanted to fight. It was pretty cool, actually. He was like, he was going to do this all by himself. But then after he hit both the Rudos, he just said, excuse me for a moment, put up his hands to stop, smiled, and did the classic lie down on the mat, get myself pinned, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty good finish.
And then there was more of discussion between them after the match, and Alan Extreme was rooting on them to turn on each other, on Aliado and Racero. And then they did, really, after the fact.
I should say, you know, we all know Alan Extreme is a great wrestler. If I talked about that, this podcast would be 5 hours long. He's fantastic. So we know this. But live, and possibly on TV, I don't know how it'll come out, but Alan was really good at the little things tonight. He was egging the technicals on when they were turning on each other. After the match, he got the crowd into it by cheering on everybody, you know, go get him, and stuff like that. And just the little things, he was amazing at. So that's one of the things that is really impressive, you know, a very well-rounded wrestler.
The guys who like saying, who like taunting the wrestlers all night, Alan Extreme was one of their favorites to actually root for.
Oh, yeah, Alan Extreme got a lot of chins. And Golden Magic was popular with the kids.
After the match, after their fight, Racero asked for a mic. I think by this time AYM had gone their break, he finally got the microphone and he announced that he doesn't care if he's Rudo or Technico. He seemed to be going Rudo after the match. Yeah, because Alan Extreme and Racero seemed happy with him, so that's a good sign. But he was going to create his own, was it Violenta VIP?
Something VIP, I know that, because he made sure to go very slow. VIP.
Yes, because there's not enough VIP groups in IWRG.
Of course not.
So
natural feud, though.
It looks like he's going to start his own group. Hopefully it'll be better than the last group he was part of with the Nuevo Tremoreros.
Machine and the other one whose name I still can't remember.
No.
This is terrible. This is terrible. We're supposed to be the experts here.
Before the match, Racero did his money throwing thing, his make it rain move.
That's right.
He did it over the stairs, and then he came back when he was walking past us. If we weren't easy enough to find on this tape, you can see us when he throws the money up again, because we had a whole bunch of money land at our feet that we got to keep. I'm not sure if it'll be accepted anywhere, but really should be. Because Racero was one of the guys, and there were a few guys in the show. Everyone looked pretty good when we saw him, but Racero looked was a lot more entertaining in person than he comes across the TV. He really interacts with the crowd well, and that's not something that you can always pick up on TV.
There were a couple of guys like that. And a final note on this match, Racero, 100 peso bill, converts into zero in American, Canadian, and even peso, just so you all know.
Shame. This would be rich.
Right. We could have paid for... Actually, we should leave it as a room service tip.
Yes. That will give us no room service. So after that, you know, on TV, the other thing, it seems like there's like a tedious break between matches, and it is long, but maybe because we were so excited to be there, it didn't feel like it was that long live. It's a little weird because they were doing a live show that we would I'll be waiting there and watching the interview with Elisa on TV, and then another couple minutes would pass when we'd watch another interview and nothing would be happening. I think at one point they did ring interest during the interview and it was just kind of confusing, but it seemed like it flowed better than I would have expected. I've been into some lucha shows in Chicago and there'd be like 20-minute intermissions between matches, and it was not like that at all here, so...
We were actually warned by Black Terry that the shows sometimes go to like 11:30, 12, which would basically be 3 hours or more than 3 hours. But since they were on AYM, it seemed like it was going a little faster because I could definitely see them doing longer breaks during the matches.
Yeah.
Third up?
Yeah, third match. Do you remember the third match?
Do I remember the third match? I'm pretty sure I remember the third match. We had our good friend Centurion.
Yes.
Our other good friend Golden Magic.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say our good friend, but... We had a third wrestler in the match named Astro Ray.
Yeah. Astro Ray Jr., not Astro de Plata.
Exactly. Astro Ray Jr. And they were taking on Canis Lupus.
Yes.
And his partners, who were, was it Spartan or Rayan?
Spartan.
Spartan and Imposible, who came out with a fake mustache and a sombrero.
With one of his dreads down his back, he just strung it through the nose holes on his mask to make himself a mustache.
As Cubs noted out, he's gone from being Jamaican to being...
Was it a caveman kind of deal?
Caveman, and now he's back to being a full-blooded Mexican.
No, he's kind of a mariachi with the sombrero.
He kept calling himself Zapata.
Yeah.
And every time he would get hit, he'd say, "Oh, Zapata." And then when he'd get up, "Ah, Zapata lives." It's pretty hilarious life. So all these guys came out, and right away you could see there was something starting between Astro Rey and...
Impossible.
Yeah. They were definitely building something right away.
They did the usual, one guy's in, the other guy, who wants to face the other guy fakes him out and tags out a bit.
It's a pretty slow start.
Slow start. Yeah. You know, what's stood out early is that a lot of Lucha Libre gear looks really good, but when you see it live, a lot of the shininess and the detail work comes out, and Golden Magic's gear and its shiny gold boots really, really look like top level.
Definitely very, very professional. Mm. You know, no guys wrestling in stupid T-shirts and tearaways or anything like that. No matter how small the attendance might have been or how small a promotion IWRG is, these guys look like, you know, just as professional as WWE guys do live.
Yeah.
And I did say the match started slow, but let me just clear this up. Mm-hmm. It got fucking crazy fast.
Yeah.
They were brawling right away. The Rudos, after a couple mat exchanges, the Rudos attacked the Technicos, and the fight was on. Everywhere you look in the building, they were just killing each other, throwing each other into things, jumping off of things. It was pretty wild to watch live, don't you think?
Yeah, we weren't the only foreigners in the building. During the second match, like about maybe a dozen other foreigners came walking in, got seated all the section, and as usual, the wrestlers played to the tourists coming in. And they were doing the harsh chops possible right in front of them.
Sickening chops.
Yes. There were some loud chops in the other matches, but they were pretty loud in this one, too.
Yep.
I have it that...
That other tour group, by the way, ended up being Canadian, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I wasn't the only Canadian in there.
The Rudos took the first fall. I do not remember how.
Basically, just over a powerbomb by Spartan. It was like an assisted powerbomb, and then Canis Lupus put away... Somebody else, I forget who, but it was probably whoever Astro Rey wasn't, because Astro Rey and Imposible were all over the floor, throwing each other around and
kept going into
the second fall too.
Yeah, the brawl it was one of the ones where the bell wasn't really necessary, but it's not like they had taken a real big break between falls.
It was hard to focus because we were out of our seats most of the time, because since they were brawling on the floor, they were always basically right near some pairing was always right near where we were. And here's the tip. If you're in the first row at a lucha show and there are no guardrails, do not have a drink, do not have popcorn, because you will drop it. They are going to come right at you.
Yeah. You could see that the regulars were the people sitting in the third row in the floor section.
Because they knew
they'd have more room and they could get out of the way a little quicker.
The idiot foreigners sit in the front row who have no idea what to expect. But the brawling was really good, and then they got back in the ring, and I thought Imposible was setting up for his crazy dropkick spot, but they ended up just doing some other triple T moves on the Technicos. I think this was the time where we saw our first hashtag superkick of the night.
Yes.
Which was pretty neat. And the Technicos made their comeback this fall, and it kind of ended really quickly with just all of a sudden they went to the finish. Astro Rey did his backwards dive off the top rope to the floor, which was
crazy.
Friggin' crazy.
Crazy to see live.
And I didn't see how Centurion pinned his guy. I think it was a double knee off the top rope, double knee.
Yeah.
And because right in front of us, we were watching Golden Magic set up, crushing Spartan with a 450 splash.
He seemed to land it clean, but Spartan was hurting after.
Spartan was big time hurting. The doctor, he called the doctor over. The doctor checked him out. It looked like he had some bruised ribs, and I figured he was done. But he got up. He was back in there for the third fall.
He started out the third fall, which was not the nicest move by his partners. Third fall was a lot.
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. They did a lot of... It was mostly technical dominated. They all got a chance to do their moves. They kept whipping guys in the air, and we thought, we need to move because there should be a dive, but there wasn't a dive yet.
No.
Dive showed up eventually.
Centurion and Canis Lupus, these guys must really hate each other in real life, because they beat the fuck out of each other with these chops that... Oh my God, their chests were so red.
Yeah.
I can't tell if they were just playing it up, if it's not normally like this, but if it's normally like this, these guys do not get paid enough.
Yeah.
Then they did a tease that Astro Rey teased that he was going to submit Impossible. Well,
yeah.
They got kicked out of the ring. Then there was a double drop kick by Golden Magic, which sent, of course, straight in front of us, sent two Rudos to the floor, which followed by great two Tope Suicidas right in front of us.
And then they went back in and they did...
Well, the crowd was chanting, Ultra, Ultra. Ultras.
And then they gave him Ultra. They ran back in. They did, it was a Tope
Gear. Double Acai Moonsaults.
Yeah. So. And then Astro Rey Impossible, he came back to finish it. And what was that?
Impossible. Astro Rey beat him.
Astro Rey won?
Because he challenged for the title afterwards.
I thought Impossible won, and I'm challenging for... And it makes more sense...
You have the notes. You're supposed to know this.
Yeah. In my notes, I have it that that the Rudos won, that Impossible did drop Astro Rey in his head.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. He did. He used the... Mm-hmm. See, I'm an idiot. Mm-hmm. Cubs is out. Mm-hmm. If you learn anything from this podcast, Cubs is always right. Mm-hmm. He did the double underhook pile driver.
Yes.
Right.
And
I was running for my life from the dives. I can't pay attention to stupid finishes.
So, Asher Ray, because it was weird, because Impossible came out with his style. Asher Ray, who seemed like for months was coming out, he was wearing his style no matter where he went. He was even on, when it was the Venus de Lucha, he had his tile belt. So, but he had no tile belt here.
Don't mention that show. You're going to get this podcast taken down.
So it seemed like it should have been something where Asher Ray was challenging Impossible for his title, but instead it seemed like Impossible was challenging Asher Ray, kind of, or Asher Ray was going to get the title shot despite losing, which they've done sometimes.
Sure.
So what we know is that we're getting more Asher Ray Impossible at
Definitely.
Some point.
They set up a lot of matches tonight. Mm-hmm. That was one of them.
Yeah. And then after Impossible's challenge, after they started talking in the microphone, which got there quicker this time, they rolled around on each other on the floor, and they were hitting each other hard, and then they were pulling off each other's masks, and of course they ended up with each other's mask on when they came back up.
Classic spot.
And the Rudos were almost hitting Impossible.
Thinking he was Astro Rey.
So, but it was an amusing visual. It was a lot of fun.
I'm not sure if that post-match will come off as well, because who knows if AYM was even recording it with their duct tape equipment, but yeah. It was pretty cool to watch live. We were really into it.
I think everyone looked good. I'm not as convinced as on Asher Ray as maybe some of the other guys in that match, but I thought Impossible looked really good working with him.
Yeah, I thought Centurion was great. I'm not just saying that because he's a totally cool dude, but no, he was fantastic as usual. And I thought Canis Lupus was pretty good. Impossible. Oh, you know what we didn't even mention was he finally did get to do his assisted dropkick.
Yeah.
And
he
murdered Astro Rey right in the face with that dropkick. That was uncool, and you would think Spartan, being a police officer, would have done something about it, but he was actually helping with the dropkick. But that was pretty damn sick.
When you see that on the YouTube video, highlight video that will eventually be this show, there'll be someone in the comments who puts that timestamp on it, and that'll be that dropkick.
Yeah, pretty much, because that was vicious.
Yeah.
Well, we're assuming AYM even filmed it.
Yeah, I'm going to assume. It was in the ring. They had a good shot in the ring.
Hopefully. You know?
After that, that was originally supposed to be the semi-main, and they moved it to the tercera, if I remember right.
I think so. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because we were surprised with Circle Negro debuted seemingly in IWRG in the semi-main. TV? It was the IWRG team of Black Terry, of Dragon Celestial, and of Fulgor Uno contra.
You got to say the full name of the arena. Come on.
No.
Arena Neza Hual. Okay, Neza Arena Neza. We'll stick with Neza.
Yeah. It would be Tony Rivera, Guerrero Mexico, and
Mixtico.
And Circulo Negro. I guess it was a semifinal.
Yeah, according to the poster, this was actually the planned semi-main event.
Well, you know what? It makes sense because it felt like a big match. They really pushed the Neza group hard.
Yeah.
The Neza group. Guerrero Mexico, the big disappointment with Guerrero Mexico, backstage, they're doing the interview, they're stealing their mic away from Elisa, who's not very happy about it.
Very not happy.
And Guerrero Mexico has this great mohawk that Eterno and Ida would have been proud of, but when he came out to the ring, it turns out that mohawk is not real. It's kind of a hair accessory.
Super disappointing.
Mm-hmm. So, this is based off...
You never mentioned the team captain for Reina Neza, our new favorite wrestler.
Oh, yeah, Tony Rivera.
Tony Rivera. ex-CMLL guy.
Yes, who still spells it T-O-N-N-Y on his gear. So I think that's, it must be a nickname, like Felina, like
Felinowski.
Yeah, it must be, or an inside joke or something at this point. But this was built up from the last Phil show where the Tony's team beat the Phil team by a little cheating, because they're always cheating at Cybernetica. And so instead of doing a normal opening, they just brawled from the moment they both got towards the ring. And it was a crazy, crazy
actually
brawl.
The first, during the entrances, the NEZA team jumped up on the apron. The IWRG team knocked them off the apron. This was like even before the whistle went. And then they went for triple dive. Yes, Black Terry going for a dive. Mm-hmm. But it was only Dragon Celestial who did a tope suicida.
And,
of course, went splat hard on the floor. We figured that was the end of him.
Yeah.
Fulgor also did a tope suicida, which was very nice. But no Dragon Celestial got up. He must have known that we wanted to see him wrestle live.
Did we have Fulgor 2 in that match?
Or no, we had Fulgor 1, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Fulgor 2 was an opener.
Yeah, the card has it switched.
Yeah.
We were looking forward to seeing Dragon Celestial because he had been talked to us. And I think he was shaken a little bit from that dive miss, but he got better as the match went along.
Sure, he got up. It's not, if it would have been a serious injury, like, you know, dislocating your finger perhaps he would have had to, you know, tell the ref to call it off.
No, but he was up, and he was up pretty quick, all considered.
And then the match, basically, the IWG guys, it went back in the ring, and it looked like the IWG guys were going to win, but Team NEZA turned it around and turned the tables on them to get the win, which prompted Tony Rivera to salute the crowd thank them for their applause, because, of course, the Reina NEZA team was being viciously booed inside Arena Now Calpan. Go figure.
They beat down. It was another brawl around the ring, outside the ring. For most of the second fall, guys got thrown into empty sections of seats. They went to the drink thing again.
This is one of the actual things that really stood out watching live compared to on TV. When on TV, they go to the brawling part of the match where everyone's just, you know, like all over the place. It's really, you know, to an average fan who's only into Lucha Libre for the dives and such, you know, they probably fast forward the brawling. Oh, this is boring, but when you're watching it live, it's crazy because you're always looking around to see what's going on. You're hearing sounds of chairs falling over, people being hit, and right in front of you, people are punching and kicking. And it's pretty awesome. Like, it's really underrated. It doesn't come off well on TV, these six-man brawls.
How did the team IWRG turn around?
There was definitely a dive because somebody came right towards us.
Yeah.
And then Black Terry did the backcracker on, I want to say, Guerrero Místico, and then Dragon Celestial did the springboard double stomp, which was pretty neat.
Yes.
Yep.
I think that was when the IWRG team were starting to come back and starting to beat up people. That's when Tony Rivera was starting to complain to the camera or complain to the people that he needed the police in here to help to quell the situation.
¿Dónde está la policía?
He was very entertaining with interactions with both the wrestlers and the crowd the whole night.
Definitely one guy that we saw live that on TV, it's Tony Rivera, who gives a shit. But live, this guy was really, really good.
They had a crazy headbutt. He had a crazy headbutting thing with Black Terry
right in front, like inches away from us. And I was too scared to grab my phone. But the sound of these headbutts was sickening.
Yeah.
Way too dangerous. Mm-hmm. Very Davey Richards-esque.
Yes.
The other finish of the second fall was a doomsday device.
Remember? Yes, they've been doing it. Fulgor's been doing that lately, and it was Cyclone Negro almost like on top of his head. That was just very dangerous.
Pretty much, this is the type of move that Lance Storm would see and basically quit watching wrestling forever.
Yeah.
Which would be a great thing, by the way, in case he's listening.
He's not listening. So in the second fall. By the second fall, Dragon Celestial's mask had been ripped up pretty well by Cyclone Negro. By the end of the second fall and maybe early third fall, Cyclone Negro's mask was just completely destroyed. He was pretty much wrestling with nothing covering his face for most of the third fall.
I could probably pick him out of a lineup.
They actually went to their corners to start the third fall, which was a big difference from the rest of the match.
We found out what corners they were in.
Yes, that was the big news.
Yeah.
It was more in the ring back and forth in that third fall, but they did end up doing some dives at the end again.
There was some impressive stuff from Dragon Celestial, Fulgor, Black Terry, of course, was great as usual. The first dive was Ciclone Negro got revenge, did a Tope Suicida right in front of us on arch rival Dragon Celestial. Fulgor did another Tope Suicida on Guerrero Mixteco. And they ended up back in the ring, both of them, because the young guys were finishing.
Because the other guys did dives too, or at least found their way out of the ring so they could go back to the two young guys who were obviously feuding the whole way.
Rivera and Black Terry had basically like excused themselves with brawling from the match. They were on the floor going at it.
And then I believe the deal was, even though they pulled Dragon Celestial's mask.
And low-blowed.
Low-blowed and pulled him, even though he didn't really have the mushrooms mask anyways at that point. He needed to cover his face. And Cyclone Negro covered him, but Dragon Celestial was face down on the mat. And then, so he had to stop and turn him over while the referee was seeing the whole thing, saw his face was covered, but he just counted three anyways.
Stupid referees, they always miss the low blows and mask pulling. I have a good mind to write a letter about this.
Yes, it's amazing how they get away with it.
But the crowd was super heated for this, I should say. Like, really, there was even a couple fans I noticed who were from Arena Neza that were really cheering them on. Mm. So it was a lot of back and forth, you know, going back and forth with the arguing about which arena was better. Yeah. And the post-match had, of course, lots of challenges.
Yeah, they teased the Neza team all bragged how this proved they were just so much better. and Guerrero Mixteco talked about how he had left the FIL training to go to Tony Rivera, and that was the right thing to do because they were so much better.
And Tony Rivera grabbed the mic and said, I'm not a trainer. I am the master.
Yes.
So the crowd went crazy for that.
The team IWRG responded. I think Black Terry said that he's glad that Guerrero Mixteco went away because he's fat. He's totally out of shape. And
of course, Guerrero Mixteco played this up big time by walking around and trying to suck in his gut. And Tony Rivera tried to plug his ears when the crowd was chanting mean things at him.
Yeah, I think Tony later said that he was going to be on a big diet and he was going to lose all the weight by next week. So we'll look forward to seeing that next week.
Sure. Then they did mask match challenges with Ciclo Negro and Dragon Celestial. And Tony Rivera and Black Terry challenged.
They did a lot of hair matches. Black Terry even kind of made that, at least gestured that challenge to Guerrero Mixteco, too. But it seems like of all the feuds they built up, it was the Dragon Celestial one versus Cyclone Negro. That's the one that they're actually going with.
There'll probably be a fail show at some point. We're thinking next month because they already did one now. So maybe in October there'll be a blow off to all this.
Yeah.
But this match, I mean, overall, fantastic. This match and the match before were the matches of the night. They went all over the place. This is like, you couldn't have asked to see a better first show with these type of matches.
Yeah, it was a great in-person match. I think nothing on the show was bad. Everything was good, but the third and fourth stood out.
Definitely, yep.
The main event was Veneno and the Traumas versus Fuerza Guerrera, Hijo de Mascaro Años 2000, and Official 911.
And who came out to Bad to the Bone.
Yes.
And with his new Rey del Ring title that he won last week.
Yeah.
He looked awesome.
He looked good. He did not wear the blue outfit, though. That would have been cool.
No blue outfit.
People had a lot of fun with Hijo de Mascaro Año being the capo, because so was one because the ref is Cafu.
Yeah.
So they just were chanting for capo, and the referee was very happy for people who were chanting for him.
Can I just say the best thing about IWRG's fans is when they chant for a wrestler, and the wrestler doesn't acknowledge them, so they keep chanting his name, and then finally when he turns around to acknowledge their chants, they yell out basically, fuck your mother, in Spanish.
Yeah, they did that to Guerrero in this match.
Yeah.
The Guerrero, I mean, the guys with the noisemakers who were sit up in the balconies must have some long-standing hatred for him, because they were on him all night. Especially, you know, they're the kind of guys who look like they might have been seeing him for like 25 years and been booing him every day for those 25 years. This was not.
Well, you're not going to mention Veneno blessing people in his entrance.
Veneno did his blessing to various kids and other people, and also to Rob.
Canadian, yes.
Yes.
I feel blessed.
You do feel differently after he gave you a little touch on the head?
Of course.
Yeah. He seemed to be enjoying himself. The kids really, really love him. I mean, you saw the kids were lining up
on the stairs before he even came out.
Just to interact.
And he got the last entrance. He was the main event entrance tonight. Yes. El Veneno.
This match wasn't as intense as the couple matches before it, but it was still a good main event. People kind of did more of their like usual stuff, I guess. Fuerza did did an early opening section with what was Trauma 2.
Yep.
That I think involved Frieza shaking his hand before and at the end of the thing. So I think Frieza looked better than Trauma 2 during the match.
The first fall was they had the pair offs after the first two guys paired off. The third set came in, which was Trauma 1 and 9/11.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, 9/11 just pinned him with a backcracker. And
yeah.
Everybody acted all surprised, like, wow, he beat him so clean. And people were basically shocked. And they played that up big time inside the ring with everybody like, how could you lose so easily? Even the fans were like, wow, it was so easy. So that was the heat for the match, basically, that 9/11 beat Trauma so easily there. And then again at the end of the match. But we'll get there. Go ahead.
Second fall. I'm having trouble putting second fall together.
Second fall, you might not be having trouble because we actually got called away.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's when we were saying...
our goodbyes, yes.
Yeah, Fulgor waved us over to say goodbye, and that was nice of him.
That was very nice, yes.
Yeah, when we were coming back, it was like two different people were being pinned, two different rulers were being pinned.
Right.
And then in between falls, the rulers were interacting with the crowd. Master Oano was bent over to... either just resting or looking at something, and Frieza comes behind him, slaps him on the back, and Masker is just so upset with his partner. It was almost a total breakup right there. But Frieza was kind of like, he was thinking his partner was pretty much an idiot, and it seemed to be correct.
Sure, they were playing it great because the fans were eating it up. I mean, we were eating it up. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he tried to slap. The fans wanted him to slap 9/11 on the ass too.
Yeah.
And then Frieza was like, "Why should I? He doesn't even have an ass." So the crowd popped for that.
I think it was the third fall was more technicals getting to show what they did. Venero did his big karate chop run on everybody.
Including
both referees. I noticed he didn't get the traumas. I don't know if the traumas should still play.
Traumas don't do that shit.
Yeah, they were kind of shaking their heads, I saw in the corner. But they welcomed them back once he tagged out. What was the finish? I know...
Oh, the Traumas did all their moves. They did a couple cool arm drags, and then Fuerza ended up on the apron, and Veneno gave him the chop of doom, which sent Fuerza to the floor.
Yeah.
And then Veneno gave him another chop off the apron, and then did his somersault off the apron, which almost took out the AYM cameraman.
He saw his life flash before him. You could see in his eyes.
You could see this. I mean, you don't have to be an expert on Lucha Libre to see when a dive is coming. You can see it being set up a mile away. And this guy's basically just standing there, just filming, like, I'm not going to get hit. So, of course, he almost gets crushed and trips over the ring post trying to get out of the way.
Yeah, that probably is the camera angle they used, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. You probably just saw, if you're watching, you saw Veneno fly over the camera, and you're left to wonder if he jumped into the abyss or something.
Yeah, Veneno was still down when the fall ended.
Sure, yeah, the finish was, the Rudos won. I know that Fuerza, or Hijo de Mascarano 2000 pinned Trauma 2. And then 9/11 pinned Trauma 1 with the, I call it a kryptonite crunch, but
yeah,
that sounds weird, doesn't it?
The Schwinn or whatever.
Schwinn, yeah, sure. Sima's move. How about that? Yeah. One of Sima's moves.
I like to call it that because he probably uses it here at some point, so then it can be kind of a Mexican name.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But yeah.
Sima always wins.
It was,
that's for another podcast.
Yes, that's when you and Dragon Gate J have your from I Heart Dragon Gate.
Oh,
you too. Get together.
That'll we would good. Have a nice debate about Sima.
But yeah, it was a clean win. There was no angle. There's no build up to another match out of that. There was nothing to set up a title for him or anything.
They could do a 9/11 trauma match out of it, I guess. Yeah. But I guess this was more just putting the Rudos over, sending everybody home happy because the Rudos were, everybody was happy with Fuerza Guerrera. So.
Yeah. Yeah. People saw him as a big star on the show.
Yep.
And
post show, we saw the kids in the ring doing their moves.
Yes.
Jumping all over the place.
Doing bomb rope splashes. And
sure.
then he couldn't quite... We rooted for the kid to do another one. He couldn't quite
make it to that first row.
So he did the super porky move and just did it from the mat into the splash. And it was great.
So basically, he's about one step above Thunder.
Yeah. And his dad really enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah.
Very,
very fun atmosphere, though. There was no... Like, that's the one thing about the show. Everybody was happy there. There wasn't a single fan there who was like, you know... I don't know, how do you describe it? Like, when you go to a US indie show, their fans are like, oh, that sucked, that wasn't fun. Everybody was just having a good time here.
I, even when they were making comments and stuff, it wasn't like fans were trying to make comments so people around them would laugh. Around them would laugh, but they were trying to interact with the wrestlers and interact with the show instead of just...
There was a lot of back and forth with the wrestlers in the ring and the fans in the crowd. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't just be like, hey, you suck. There would be actual insults and actual comments about their physique or how they look, you know, and then the wrestlers would fight back with how the fans look and how they're a bunch of drunks just sitting there drinking.
The people working the show were really nice. The ushers really all over the place to help people out.
Fantastic. Yeah, service. They bring anything to you. You want a beer, you want popcorn, they bring it right to your seat, no matter where you're sitting.
So that was all good. I think Zhao was the other guy.
Was a photographer.
We met him, and he was nice. We talked to him before the show and a little bit after the
show. Speaks a little English.
We talked to the RCH promoter, too. Yep.
For the show on Monday.
Yeah, excited but nervous, because it's always... A lot of things have to go right when you're running a show.
Apparently, we'll be in the same seats for RCH on Monday.
Yeah.
So hopefully... No guardrails, by the way. That's one thing we forgot to mention. But yeah, I'm sure people will see it on TV anyways.
Yeah, at least the plan is now for no guardrails.
And the plan is for RCH, too, no guardrails. Because the fans... Apparently, as the promoter says, the fans like it better with no guardrails.
When they can go into the seats. It looks a lot better that way, but...
Sure. Less advertising, though. Are we allowed to mention why CMLL put up guardrails that we found out?
It was because if you remember, there was an incident where someone put a drink on Sombra's head after he dived into the crowd, and that was just no good. And I think there's probably more incidents than that, but that was the breaking point where they won.
If you want to see the actual match, it was January 13th, 2012.
Yeah.
It was the main event of the show, 6-man tag, and great match, by the way. And everybody was doing dives, and Sombra ended up doing a somersault onto, I think it was Mr. Aguila, Sikosis. Mm-hmm. And then as he was sitting there, a fan just put his cup upside down on Sombra's head, which was pretty stupid, actually.
Yeah, very disrespectful.
That is why there are guardrails
there. Yeah, I mean, CML said that it was to protect the fans, but it really is more for the wrestlers to keep them a safe distance away from the people who aren't really behaving well.
As an added bonus, also CML gets more advertising.
Yes, they're always liking that. So, I think that was everything from the show.
Go ahead.
We stuck around a little bit afterwards. They're not kicking you out of the building afterwards, but they would like you to...
They turned the lights off when they wanted everybody... You ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here, was basically how it was.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Let people take off photographs after a match, stand on the ring, tourists we saw really seemed like they enjoyed the show in general, especially because they got played to, but they also
were catered to,
but they also enjoyed standing in the ring and taking photos after
match. That was a big I guess that's the big thing. Everybody wants to get in the ring and take their picture and mess around, so it's kind of cool. What did you think were, like, if you could name some of the top differences watching live?
You don't get the interaction with the crowd as much because it doesn't come across, but you have the announcers talking over. We didn't really miss having the AYM announcers at all watching the
Dynamite.
We did see them broadcasting. I saw them after show, but that was all I needed. I needed to see them. I did not need to hear them. We saw actually I saw the set that Lisa uses to do interviews, which is really on the opposite side of the arena as the entrance. So maybe that's why it seems like there's a long break between the interviews and the entrances, because they have to walk
all the way around.
They were walking out the outside of the building, going all the way around to get back into the arena. The costumes look better. You could really feel the violence and the chaoticness of it came a lot stronger on live than it does on TV, because you can see the action going all over the place where you really can't as well pick that up on the TV.
Sure, it was the 6-man brawling especially, you don't really realize how great that is until you're there in person and you're seeing everything going crazy and how intense the crowd is when they come near them. And the crowd really gets into it. The one thing, you know, the difference is I don't want to shit all over U.S. wrestling. I mean, there are a lot of good U.S. wrestlers and wrestling promotions, but they're like, the roles are very defined in Lucha Libre, technicals and rudos.
Yeah.
So you cheer the technicals, you boo the rudos, or the vice versa, depending on how you are. So crowd is always into it. It's like a sporting event. They're always, even if there's a lull in the action, they're always cheering for their guy. Mm-hmm. So there's never as Cubs was saying, you know, sometimes there's silence when he goes to U.S. indie shows, just waiting for, I wonder what the next move is.
Yeah.
But the crowd is like 100% into anything, even straight from the opener.
Yeah, so it was a really enjoyable time. I think it was probably even better than we thought it was. I mean, again, it wasn't a big crowd, and it wasn't a big show. I mean, the main event wasn't really building to anything. It was just six guys with something to do on Thursday. But they still did full effort.
Sure, yeah.
It was... the undercard's generally a young group of guys who are probably more motivated than you would get with veterans, but they would... But I think everyone put out full effort on the show. No one kind of walked through their matches. It was a situation where you might, in other environments, you might see people with that size of a show just take a night off, but there was no one taking a night off here.
Honestly, I'd give the show a 10 out of 10, but I don't want to because what am I going to do if tomorrow's anniversary show is better?
Tomorrow might be a 25 out of 10. So.
Sure. This was an excellent show, though, and very good. Considering this is the only IWRG show, I think we came out victorious with the one that we ended up seeing.
It's the only IWRG show, but I'm looking forward to seeing how that arena sounds with full house.
Sure,
for
definitely.
Monday.
Yeah, because they're expecting a sellout on Monday. We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, they don't know yet because they didn't have tickets on sale when we went there. Right. So there's going to be a big line getting into that arena, I guess, on Monday.
If only we knew somebody who could possibly get us in earlier. We'll have to work on that.
Or could get us tickets earlier. So
somebody like that. Somebody must exist. Maybe a son of a wrestler. We'll see.
Yeah.
And other than that, I mean, yeah, great show.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to talk about for today or talk about for tomorrow?
No, just how excited we are for tomorrow. How excited. There's a buzz, just in this hotel room, maybe. There's a buzz about the CML show tomorrow. And already on Twitter, I can see they posted their today's the day, the big mask match, four masks on the line. And Super Lucha's talking about how they're going to close a freeway if Atlantis loses. So it should be good.
You know, talking to some of Russell, some of them didn't seem that interested in Arena Mexico or that show, but some of them seem like recognized this was going to be a big event
stuff. Everybody who we talk with about the show, the wrestlers themselves, they all say, too expensive.
Yes.
The tickets, too expensive.
Yeah, it's not the kind of... I think they know it has the big names, but the prices are just crazy as far as they're concerned. I mean...
Yeah.
And it makes sense when we're going to a show that's 120 pesos, and the show...
Basically.
If you believe all you read on Twitter is getting 100 times that for some tickets on Friday but from the scalpers. If what you believe on Twitter is true, all the tickets have been sold by the box office. And
right. The
tickets, that doesn't mean we're going to have the capacity is going to be full because the scalpers probably have a ton of tickets.
But if CML gets the money from everything that's been sold, they're not even going to be close. That this is going to be the most profitable show in the history of the company.
There's a longer digression that we don't want to go into, but I think that's when people judge how CML's ticket sales are going by the attendance in the building, that might not be the accurate way because there's so many tickets there
sold, exactly.
On the secondary market. We really enjoyed a drive back and forth through the arena. I'm not sure how much of that we're allowed to share, but
probably none of it, but you can tell who we were talking with.
And we were highly encouraged to spend the drive asking questions, and we got some great answers, some insightful stuff.
Like a shoot interview with Black Terry, Senior.
Yes, pretty much. We did not record that. You had to be there, but if you were there, you really enjoyed that. We learned a lot.
Even if we recorded it, I'm wondering how many people listen actually understand Spanish and would be able to. But he's a very nice gentleman. He talked about his entire career, his favorite opponents, who he trains now, who he likes the most.
He has a good sense of humor.
Great sense of humor.
The questions that were off limit that he told us not to ask him were very funny.
Right, right. But very kayfabe. Like, I mean, you have to, you know, you don't, obviously you don't want to ask too much questions about gimmick changes and such like that, but
he had a lot of opinions about, or I question him a lot about the difference in training and trainers and what they look for in wrestlers and really how IWRG training works. We got a lot of questions answered.
If you're a wrestler listening to this or an upcoming wrestler, you should know, like, the luchadors train a lot, like three or four times a week, and it's not just to improve their physique. They get in the ring, they take their bumps, they go through exercises inside the ring. That's the key.
They get graded. They get evaluated on every match. What we saw today is what they're going to break down tomorrow. Basically.
Tomorrow, Black Terry is going to take a select group and just talk about what went wrong tonight, what went right, and go over stuff like that. And, sounds like he's very intense about, he also told us, which is a good thing, he's one of those guys who, he doesn't think that the new generation does stuff wrong. Yeah. He wants to incorporate the old stuff with the new stuff and come up with like a happy medium.
He doesn't want people just learning the new stuff and missing the bases and the Lucha Olympica and the Wrestlelona of the old style. He wants Lucha Libre to grow in style instead of just moving to one extreme or another extreme.
Sure. And he watches, he likes MMA, he watches WWE. Yeah. I had some indie DVDs I gave to his son, and apparently he's going to watch those too.
Yeah.
Black Terry watching the King of Flight tournament. That should be interesting.
Black Terry Jr. said that his dad watches all the DVDs he gets first.
Yeah.
And Black Terry has this
amazing
collection of DVDs. So they both must have seen some amazing, a lot of Lucha Libre, a lot of professional wrestling from all over the world.
Definitely. He's got a lot of stuff.
You know,
let's put it that way.
We thanked him. We offered to pay for gas, and we may end up... Did we end up paying for gas?
We did.
But if we get one big favor... He was talking about...
We or I, considering he doesn't even know. Never mind. I'm just kidding, everybody. We're splitting things evenly.
But we mentioned if you... We asked early if you want... If he hoped he would wrestle in Japan again, and he mentioned that he hopes he wrestles everywhere again. He got to wrestle in Arena Mexico. He had been opening a long time. He got to go back to Arena Mexico. He went back to Arena Coliseo.
Yep.
We got the impression that might be the last. That's not the last time we'll see him.
Can we give a sneak peek?
No. You'll find out.
He'll find out. Yeah.
But he mentioned
before the month is over, he'll be back somewhere.
He mentioned that he would really love to go to Japan again.
Yep.
So if someone in Japan is listening to this who promotes shows and would like a really good luchador on their show,
or to train their youngsters,
just work one match with your youngsters and they'll get a lot better. He's available, so just call the right people.
Definitely.
Tweet the right people. Go on Facebook because I hear there's a lot of people on Facebook. So yeah, that may be the way to go.
Don't waste your money flying over NWA guys, Rene Dupre. Who's the
Rob Conway.
Rob Conway.
Yeah, so they should have made Black
WWE guys instead of Black Terry. What are you thinking?
So they could have made Black Terry NWA heavyweight champion, and then he would have a match with Jushin Liger in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
that
come on.
Would work great. Everyone would be happy with that.
One of my favorite stories Black Terry told, actually, I'm surprised Cubs didn't mention this, was about in his younger days traveling to Chicago.
Yes.
He used to work bar shows. And then we asked him, who were the other guys that went with you? And randomly he just tosses out, Tejano, Viano One, and all these great names from the UWA, but back when they were really young, and just working these tiny shows in Chicago.
I think people would have killed to find out about these shows now, or killed to go back in time to go watch these shows. So
he talked about also wanting to see some of his old matches on tape and being disappointed that they weren't recorded and he couldn't look back on them. So
yeah, because I think the big problem with Lucha history is it only extends as far as we have TV for a little. I mean, people see the results, but doesn't impact them much when they don't have video of it. And so a lot of the... It goes a lot further back in the U.S. and in Japan, but since it's only maybe... It really only starts to fill in those late 80s. Yep. And even if that much.
And most of that's just EMLL. You don't get anything from UWA, which is where Black Terry spent basically his entire early career.
And enjoyed it the most, so...
Yeah, he said he enjoyed that the most. He also talked very highly of working Hamada's UWF and the difference between how the Japanese youngsters are trained compared to the Mexican youngsters. Some fun stories about that. And very, very, very nice guy. I mean, the type of guy, if you spoke his language, I'm sure you could just go back and forth, but we were working with a translator.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The best thing he told us, probably, that I asked him about how his eye was doing after the My Eye Shows match with Negro Casas, where he had the big, ugly black eye. Yep. And he had mentioned that he was having blurred vision, but he was doing eye exercises to improve them. And we were both surprised there were such things as eye exercises. And he tells a story that he was doing them, and one of the young stewards came up to him and asked him what he was doing. And he says, "I'm doing eye exercises." And the steward thought he was totally joking at the time. And then Terry thought that was funny, but they also realized that they need to pass that on to the kids so they learn those. We didn't actually get him to do that, but I think we both could have used it at some point.
But I loved his reasoning for the eye exercises, because he said a lot of luchadors should do it because they wrestle in masks.
Yeah.
And you need to, you know, your eyesight, sometimes it's not good in masks, depending on how the mask is. And it's very important, obviously, to, according to him, to do eye exercises. So it's good that he's passing it on to the younger generation.
We don't want to tell everything was there, because you had to be there.
Yeah, it's very, very, very enjoyable. Car ride. Who would have thought with Black Terry to an IW?
Like, we're wearing the same shirt he wore to the press conference where they announced his match, too. I noticed that. That was amusing.
these guys, you know, honestly, some people listening might think we're making this up, but we're totally not.
Yeah.
And I hope that the few of you that contacted me and said you guys wanted to join in the trip and then decided not to, I hope you're very angry with yourself right now, because so far you're missing an incredible time.
I don't think we've been able to fit them in the car, though, so they would miss
out. That would be a problem. Yes, it was a very, very crowded car, so we would have had to rent a bus or something.
Yes, and Black Terry Jr. was teasing us that it was going to be 2 hours long to get there, and it was not 2 hours
long. It was not, but I was surprised at how much of travel it was. Maybe it was just traffic.
It was a lot of traffic, I think.
But we passed, actually on the way, we passed Toluca.
Yeah. Well, there are exits to look at least.
Sure, we saw signs. We passed. Black Terry pointed out we were passing the Sala de Armas, where AAA is taping TV next Sunday.
We went near the plant section and all. We didn't go straight there, but we went there. We saw a lot of stuff. What was it? The military installation.
Cecilia appears to be holding up a Kleenex with something.
Oh yeah, they mentioned just that the Toriumon gym was actually housed right next to the Arena Nasopan.
Yep, right next door. That's where Ultimo Dragon used to house the students, so they would live right near the arena.
People are still living there, at least recently.
Yeah, he still rents it out, they were saying.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Should we, how about before we sign off, we actually see if anybody has any questions, they should leave it as a reply.
Yeah, if there's anything you want to ask us about our trip or stuff
that we're allowed to talk about.
Yeah, we will do our best. But if you have questions or stuff, or just about stuff we're going to see, stuff we've seen, stuff we ought to see.
Or if you want us just to stop doing this because it's bad, because we don't know how it's going without feedback.
Yeah, so just give us feedback, let us know how we're doing. We'll probably do another podcast Saturday morning, early Saturday morning by the time we get back from Marina, Mexico. And
depending on how super excited we are, if we can calm down.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get one up.
Pardon me? If we have a voice.
Yeah.
Cecilia is too shy, I think, to be on the podcast, but she's whispering stuff to us in the background. She's been a major help, by the way. It definitely helps if you're coming to Mexico. You have to come with somebody who translates. It's very helpful to us, the fact that we have somebody translating our broken Spanish.
Yeah. I mean, we get conversations when you can pick out one or eight words, but it's a lot quicker when someone actually speaks Spanish for you.
When we say we were talking to Black Terry in the car, we mean Black Terry was talking to Cecilia, and then Cecilia was talking to us.
Yeah.
So if it was a two-hour ride, it wasn't, but basically it would be a one-hour conversation because it takes so long to get the conversation going each way.
Yeah. But it was great.
It's fantastic. Okay. No complaints about the trip at all yet. No safety issues for those of you hoping we get shanked or whatever.
We met someone from Belgium who mentioned coming from the metro, and Noriko talked about how she takes the metro everywhere.
All by herself, This is like a tiny Japanese lady, you know. She says she has no problem. So, you know, I mean, at this point, the way we talk about Mexico, we're probably begging to get shot or stabbed at this point.
No.
But no, everybody seems to talk. We told people, some people were afraid to come because they were scared of violence, but they were just surprised. Like, why would they be scared? You know, everything's fine.
Yeah.
It's mostly outside Mexico City. I'm sure it's different. But in Mexico City, I mean,
there's no issues.
Very nice.
I mean, you can see the security presence in places. It makes sense. We asked on the ride if there was a specific reason why they had so many official gimmicks, and there really wasn't, as far as we could tell.
Just that they own the rights.
But if you walk around the city, you can see a lot of police everywhere. You can see, when we went to the mall earlier, we could see a police officer, security guard with a large automatic weapon standing outside that. Yeah, he was at the door. I mean, maybe it's just the places we're going, but there's usually a security guy at the entrance wherever we go, just to make sure the right people are coming in there and no one's doing anything outside the building. So,
the other interesting thing today was negotiating prices with taxi drivers to get to Arena Mexico.
Because
we're trying to arrange a plan, and it's interesting to see the difference, what some people will charge compared to other people, just for a simple ride to Arena Mexico. But it needs to be done, because when the show ends late, you definitely want to take a taxi back from Arena Mexico. It's going to be a madhouse, especially tomorrow.
There's a big range in taxis, as far as we've seen. I mean, it's not like what you might see. I'm not sure what your experience in Canada, but in like USA, it's where it's like a taxi car that's just a taxi car. It's someone's car that they're using that may have a meter, but doesn't always have a meter.
But we would suggest going with somebody with a meter. You don't want to suddenly get charged, you know, crazy amount of money for a simple ride. But getting around in taxis is very easy, very cheap. I was actually shocked. We asked the other day when we were riding the metro, Black Terry scanned us in. Mm. So today I wanted to find out how much the pass was so I could repay him. Mm. And the answer was basically less than a penny. Mm. That's how much it costs to ride the subway. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any currency that's less than a penny.
Yeah. So I think that's it for today. We're probably thinking more stuff to say tomorrow that we haven't thought of today. But for now, we're going to...
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you thought. Thanks.
That was good.